Hello, my name's Scott. You're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature. We're talking all things teaching high school English and how to make it enjoyable, fun, exciting, meaningful. And that is actually the exact focus of what we're talking about today. But if you want to know more about me, you can go to theteachersworkshop.com. I offer online professional development for high school English teachers. I also have a Teachers Pay Teachers website if you're interested. If you enjoy listening to my show, please leave me a review wherever you get your podcasts. So, yeah, that's typically how I start my show, is by talking about how to make life easy and fun and exciting and something that we enjoy, something obviously that our students enjoy, you know, how to eliminate stress from our lives. And this is basically the whole system that I outline in my online course. All revolves around the idea of, well, you know, part of it is also excellence. So from the topics that we talk about and to how we teach really complex novels. But it is a lot about making life easy and working smart, not hard. Of course, you know, a lot of it is the projects that, you know, actually I'm about to start this sort of, well, I say year-long project, but, you know, it's a semester-long because I'm just getting it started now. But, you know, what kind of projects can we give? What kind of creative assignments can we give so that our students really see the value of literature, words, language, poetry, short stories, imagination, all these things that we study? You know, how can we, you know, ask them to create those things for themselves? And so in doing so, you know, see the value of it. But I'm just going to sort of be broad this time and just talk about the things that we can do to just keep ourselves happy. And, you know, that's the title of this, is Happy Teacher, Happy Student. And I think, you know, the title basically means if we come into class, you know, regardless of what's going on outside of our class, if we come into class with a positive attitude and a go-getter kind of style, where we really have high expectations for performance and we're really using every minute of our class wisely, our students will be that way too. You know, however we are, our students follow our lead. If you look back on your own experiences, teachers who were just, you know, kind of going on autopilot and just had the same routine year after year, you knew who they were. You knew that they were, you know, sometimes really good at teaching the material, but weren't, you know, necessarily interested in, you know, sort of being the person, you know, like the other teachers that we remember, being the person that we remember, the person that makes jokes, has fun, makes class interesting other than just the material itself. Now, obviously, having a strong content knowledge is super important, and, you know, having a, you know, being passionate and dedicated, you know, sort of interested in the way that the words come out on the page and reading it emotionally and really getting into what the writer is saying, what they're trying to express, that's all really important. But, you know, also the culture of our class is really important too. And I feel like this year there's just a lot of challenges for teachers. Like for me in New Jersey, it's the winter. You know, the winter's really, really, really cold, rainy this year. And I think I thought the masks would be off in the fall. But we're still wearing masks. They just lifted the mandate in our state. So, but, you know, I think a lot of kids are still coming off a year where they're expected to be at home and are just kind of antsy and either fell behind and are frustrated with trying to catch up or just trying to get back into the routine of school. And they're sort of excited to see their friends, but they might still be wearing masks, and or they're just getting back into the routine of school after a year. You know, when you look back on your life when you're a kid, a year is a really long time. For us, it's just a, you know, it's something that happens quick. And but so I think this is a good time to really think about what, you know, and happiness is a loaded word, because I feel like it's something that we toss at people. Like, maybe, you know, if you're my generation, it was all about being happy and do what makes you happy. You know, and work is, I don't know how many jobs can make people actually happy. You know, it's something you do. And you know, maybe a lot of people see the value in what they do, and they have people at work that they get along with and they're friends with. But doing the actual work part, you know, if you're just making profit for a company in some fashion or another, it's not always going to be a source of great happiness. Even teaching, obviously, comes with a ton of challenges. And Being in front of the kids, being with the kids, talking to the kids, being there when they walk in the class and when they leave, and all those different things that are just such a great part of teaching. Just even there's a lot of little things I like about just checking out what kind of food they're eating. I don't know. I always love to see what they're eating, even though this year that's less of a something that people, it's like, oh, taking the mask off to get something to drink or whatever. But talking about food and talking about music and just doing all those things that we can do to be human, not to be friends, but to be somebody that they can respect and have, walk into a class and be excited about walking in the class. I think that's the big thing, is how can we be really excited about walking into class? And so I think right now it's just a really stressful time for teachers, and it's good to kind of remind ourselves of how to keep happy, how to keep sane, keep doing what we do, being excited about it. And one way of thinking about it is that we have a lot on our plate right now. That's a kind of cliche. So when you think about that, having a lot on your plate, you got to think, okay, well, if there's a lot on my plate, what can I do to like scrape some off for the dog? Because you don't need a lot on your plate, right? Like, it's going to fill you up. You're going to be really bloated afterwards. And so if you just scrape some off, it's going to be healthier. It's going to make you feel better. And it's just unnecessary to have all that stuff, right? So that's, I think, what we have to do is think about, like, why do we have so much stuff on our plate, and how can we take some of it off, while still kind of flying under the radar, not being on anybody's, attracting anybody's attention in doing so. But we can also kind of think about who cooked the food on that plate, who made it, and how can we sort of think about like making that food tastier and healthier. And to some extent, I think this is the interesting thing about this food on the plate thing I'm going with, is sometimes you're just served the food on your plate, and so there's not much we can do about that. And I think teachers, I was actually just reading this article about why it's not good to push positivity, or not positivity, but just this mind, this sort of positive mind frame of you can do what, anything you set your mind to, and you can accomplish your dreams. And that's nice to hear. And every super successful person ever has always had that message of, look at me, you can do it too. But sometimes you have to eat what's on your plate, right? Like, you're not the cook. You could make your own food, but at a job, your boss gives you a plate, right? And if you're in public education, you're gonna have a administrators putting the food on your plate and saying, here you go, eat it. You have politicians saying, what, we're gonna require that you have this, that, and the other thing in this meal, and you got to eat that. Or in the case of a teacher, you have to dish that, whatever that is, on your plate out to your students. It's kind of extending this in wild ways, but you can see what I'm saying. You've got to deal with the cards you're dealt sometimes in life. And if somebody's telling you have to do something a certain way, and they say, oh, well, the research says this, and or this is what we're going to try next. There's always something to think about in teaching. But that's one important thing to remember, is that we can't just create happiness out of thin air, right? It's futile to aggressively push a positive mindset on somebody who has little to no control over their circumstances, especially when it comes to not just life, but work life. But it is good still to reflect on what makes teaching hard, and also what makes it amazing, and that's, I think, the important part of thinking about these things. If teachers are excited about having the creative freedom to do what they know works, then students will share in their energy and enthusiasm. And I'm lucky to work in a place that, I mean, it's almost overwhelming how much creative freedom that I have. We're always being asked to read this book and consider this, way of doing things. And actually, there's a thing that we do called an alternative professional project, an APP. We're actually encouraged to take a creative risk in our teaching, just to see how it works out. And it's okay if it doesn't, but it's all about just trying something new. and doing something that we think that the kids will really like. And it always, of course, should, you know, has some kind of value and purpose. So we're kind of forced into being creative every year, which is fantastic. I mean, this is wonderful. So I'm always reading new novels with the idea that I could possibly teach them. And, you know, obviously every place is different. So I'm lucky. I know I'm lucky because I've worked in other places that are not as much like that. Actually, I remember the first job I had at private school, they were like, I was like, okay, so what books do I teach? And they were like, whatever, what do you mean? Like, whatever you want, like teach the books you want. I'm like, oh, I don't need to, ask or get approval or anything. They're like, no, just teach your favorite books you taught in, whatever you did in school. And I was like, that's really cool. It's a lot of work kind of, I literally invented the wheel, but, every school is different. So I think that's kind of, I'm trying to sort of gear this to people who might not have that much freedom. And, it's just sort of important to keep certain things in mind, I think. And I've gotten a lot of good advice about dealing with the stress of being a teacher and wanting to be a really good teacher over the years. And so I'm sort of, going to lay it out here in sort of six main things that I try to keep in mind as I walk into my classroom, sort of shut the door behind me, because we have to remember that's the most important space to be. And my wife and I are always talking about this because she's in education too. And the happiest we are in our jobs is with the kids, and that's just it's just always a special place to be with kids who want to learn and who are eager to talk to you about the world and why it is the way it is and try to problem solve and have really good conversations. And it's also important to frame this all in the context of life, whatever is on your plate, so to speak, in life. I got three really, really young kids, and one is right in the middle of the terrible twos and not really speaking as much as he should be. And so we're just sort of catering to all these needs going on in my house. And so when you look at the big picture of sort of wellness and what that means and happiness and what that means, we have to really, think about the importance of what we do, but also realize that, we have our lives to think about. So the first thing is prioritizing learning over assessment. So I talk about this a lot, and I think about it on a daily basis, just how much am I expecting them to really show me what they know, and how much am I teaching, right? How much are we, in the sense of learning is oftentimes between, at least in English language arts, is between students talking about literature. But really assessment is one of my main sources of stress, because you get that I just got a big set of essays today onto the lighthouse. And that feeling where you hand back a bunch of essays and then they just got a whole big old pile of, notes and classwork and all the different activities you did, that help them prepare for the essay. And that all comes in at the same time, just as you got something else done. You're like, oh yeah, I got to do another couple weeks of grading here. And, so it really is stressful. So it's something we got to think about. How often do we assess, and how much are we just letting students learn? Grading takes time away from all the important things like lesson planning, researching, finding poems, good short stories to do, websites, all that professional sort of learning that we do online by looking up histories of things, just reading and learning. That's a really important part of being a teacher, is reading the news and being culturally aware of what's going on in the world. That's all stuff that we have to do if we want to be really good teachers. Communicating with parents and students, making sure that we're following up with emails quickly and talking to parents on the phone when we need to, conferencing with students over their writing. I mean, that's all really important stuff. And this, grading is, it's important. We got to know where our students are, but students don't learn from taking tests and quizzes all the time, right? When I say learning, I mean really reading, that's learning. Listening is how students learn, and then taking notes. So you read, and then you take notes, and you listen, and you take notes. That's really the heart and soul of learning. And that should always take up more class time than, say, assessment, which is primarily writing, right? In our field, it's writing. and speaking, right? You're sort of creating something when you write and you speak, and that's always basically where our assessment is we're listening to what they have to say to understand what they know, and then reading their writing. Again, we don't want them writing and speaking to, speaking, I mean, and, you know, sort of performance and, you know, delivering something to an entire class or an entire group, not just conversation. I think conversation is more something where you're engaging, actively listening, and then sort of chiming in with your different feedback. I think that's a part of the learning process. But, you know, speaking in the sense of formal speaking is an assessment. So we don't always want to put them under this pressure to say what they know, because they have to know the thing first before they speak. And so that's number one. Number two is make learning fun, be spontaneous and human. In my online course, I go over the different things I try to do to you know, be this way in my class, all the kind of specifics. But again, you want kids to be excited to come into your classroom. And so children long to learn in an environment where they feel comfortable and at ease. You know, for instance, give me an example. Last year, it was around this time. It was like right in the middle of the winter. It's like you're kind of itching for a spring to come around, and still cold. And I knew that a lot of we were online, and we were in class. You know, I was in class with a couple of kids. A lot were online, and so it was just this difficult year. And so I decided to start every class for a while, not the whole year, but for a while, with like the best song. I had created this list so I could just kind of, it's actually in a blog I did last year, a podcast, where I just picked like my favorite really, really upbeat and uplifting songs, and I played them at the beginning of class just to get started and, you know, start that conversation. Yeah, you know this song, and that sort of thing. And then they give their suggestions for songs. And so it's just kind of fun, you know, just I try to play songs whenever I can. If they're doing something visual or that doesn't require a lot of thinking, that's light, I try to play a little light music that's not too distracting. When you think about it, a lot of these kids' lives can be really hard in their homes. And so they come into school to sort of escape their home life, especially teenagers, right? You know, what teenager doesn't butt heads with their parents at some point? So school should be a place where they can come, they can laugh, they can find relief from anything that's going on there. And so we want to be those adults that they can connect to and sort of, you know, if they're angry, frustrated, or not getting along with their parents, or something bad happens, they should be able to come into school, and it's just a safe, fun place. And it's not a place where, you know, they're going to get picked on or bullied or not made to feel uncomfortable. Where we can have really good conversations with people, all different kinds of people, that they might not think that they have anything in common with, but then they got this book that they've read, and so they have something in common. They have a common point that they can talk about with people that they might not normally talk about with really deep conversations about spirituality and family and faith and joy and love and, you know, fear, crime. You know, all these different things that are issues and topics in the world that we live in, and so that's the space that we want to create for them. And think about the other. So not only think about the home that they live in, think about the news. I mean, like right now we're dealing with this thing in Russia. You just look at that and you're like, okay, that's really sort of disappointing. To say the least. And then you got social media where they're looking at everybody else being cool, and am I cool, and I'm not that attractive, and right, like all these different things. Like, think about being a kid, and then think about mixing up social media with being a kid. It's a tough world to live in. People being mean, they're saying bad jokes to each other and posting memes that are just inappropriate and horrible half the times, or getting stuff from people that are just, you know, it can be a fun place. Obviously, that's why a lot of people use social media, because they like it. But this is a terrible place to gossip and say horrible things about people. We're all kinder and nicer in person. And so that's a big part of their world. Like, a lot of kids, especially now, are on their phones constantly. And so again, school needs to be this place that is real, where they can actually look somebody in the eye and tell them a story and have an opinion and talk about a variety of different things, not just literature, but what's in the news and some story that they heard through in a podcast or a TED Talk or something. That, you know, it should, our, the classroom that we set up should counter the all the horrible things that they experience either on online or at home. You know, and obviously home is probably a great place for most kids too. And, it, you know, but it just, it has its moments of being not great, right? And school should be consistent. It should be consistently good. It should be consistently fun. It should be something that everybody is always excited to do every single day, regardless, because that's the role we play. Of course, sometimes we're going to come in tired or hungry, and but that's what we, I try so hard every day to make the conversation and the activity as interesting as possible. Because I know that our students are coming in the door, they're looking for answers. And they also are excited to be a part of a deep conversation, but they also want to just laugh, right? They just want to have a good time. Even if it's a bad joke, I always try to make light of something. And so, yeah, I think they want to hear stories. They want to hear stories from other people. They want to tell their own stories. And they want to do it creatively through fiction. And not just through conversation, but fiction, video, video essays or just movies, visual graphics, whether it be a poster or something create online, Canvas, and recorded audio. You know, we're going to do some podcasts later in the year. So there's a variety of different ways to have fun with conversations and stories and topics and ideas. And that should all be an important part of what we do. Number three is, I mentioned this already, life comes before work. Our work is, like I keep kind of talking about, is important and has the potential to change individual lives and improve society. So that sounds huge. But in the grand scheme of things, we teach a tiny fraction of the general population. I mean, we might in our career work with thousands of kids, but it's still, I think about that, it's still a tiny fraction of the whole population. And on an individual level, it's obviously really important, but it's not so important that we put work before our family, friends, travel, personal pursuits. You know, think about all the things that you want to do as far as, you know, hiking or playing an instrument or, you know, going somewhere you've never been, driving somewhere with your friends. Don't ever give up your life for your work. I say that, you know, early in my career, I gave up a lot of my life for my work. You know, so you have to get good at the job, and that's definitely a part of it. And every year it does get easier and easier. But I think the good news is that we can be effective teachers without bringing our work or our stress home with us. We shouldn't want school to be a source of stress for our students, but rather a place where they can put in a hard day's work and then come home and relax. And that it should be the same for us. You know, obviously a little light reading is something that everybody, I think, should do every day. And that's what we're sort of asking to do. But, you know, as far as, you know, making life easier for ourselves, something we should prioritize. Number four is focus on the future and not the past. It's easy to get hung up on the things people say or how we handle the situation. And schools, you know, I'm sure every school contains a lot of, we'll say, personalities. And there's always a temptation to not be professional, except for the kids that are, they're like, it's kind of in their nature to not be professional. But the longer you teach, the more you realize how there really is a story behind every child and every behavior. In the end, the only thing that matters is future behavior. It's not what happened. We get hung up on, you know, what am I going to do about this? What's the consequence? I have to, you know, be strict, and I don't want them to, you know, all these different things that roll around our head. But really the important thing is moving forward, what's going to happen, right? And we always want to meet kids where they're going, not even where they are, but where they're going. The objective is to always keep up with the work and not drown in past work, right? Not catch up on work that might prevent a student from moving forward. Five is tune out the noise. People have plenty of unflattering opinions about teachers. So I'm sort of defining noise here. And it's easy to get fixated on what's wrong with schools and politicians, our culture, all these things that are beyond our control. There's no shortage of things to be disappointed in. But there's no doubt about it. We have the best job in the world. Children come into our classrooms wide-eyed and eager to learn about literally everything. We make a difference in the lives of our students by being ourselves, by caring about their growth, and showing them how to problem solve and stay positive about whatever comes their way. They go to school to learn the information that we're going to teach them, but they also go to school, they don't know this, to learn how to learn. They're figuring out methods that will help them take in whatever information it is and quickly have a handle on it. The last one is defend your choices and autonomy. So however we try to make the best of our circumstances, there may be situations where it's important to stand up for what's right and articulate what you know works in the classroom. Now, this is obviously not always easy. Again, I sort of started this conversation by talking about the particular situation or the context of your school, your administrators, your parents. Every place is different, but every place has similarities. And there's no perfect school, right? There's going to be things that if you feel strongly, like I know this is the right thing to do, and it doesn't mean you're going to get your way, and that, you know, we're teachers, we don't have all the power. But I think it's worth planting that seed sometimes in somebody's mind, like, hey, like, I've done this before. Or if you just let me try it, let's just see how it goes. There's just different ways of wording things. And I think defending what it is that we do, because it's always coming under attack, especially when it comes to race right now. And so I think, I mean, I guess another thing that I'm lucky, I teach racial literacy, which I think should be a course at every school, just have conversations about race. But, you know, that's just one topic. I mean, there's just a ton of things that you would want to do, tons of choices that you'd want to make. And I think we're not going to, if you think it's important and if there's something that everybody's doing that is working and that it's exciting, it's worth standing up for what you believe in. Education has seen plenty. If you've been around long enough, you know that there's just almost yearly fads. There's these things, the ideas that come along, and some of them are cool. You know, they had the teachable moment and differentiation, and I don't think that's a fad. I think it's here to stay. There's some things that's going to stand the test of time, and there's going to be things that doesn't stand the test of time. And there's things we're saying, oh, well, the research says that we should all be doing this, and so let's think about how we do this in our classroom. And then later we're realize it doesn't work and say, that was nice. I learned from it, but I'm going to go back to doing this thing. And maybe it's slightly different from what we did before, but you know, people talk about how schools haven't changed much in a long time, but I think that the foundational things, like the things that, like grades, for instance, and you know, the rotating schedule and the physical space of a classroom, people have experimented with different things over the time. And the basic idea of it, that you could come in and learn chemistry, and you had a chemistry teacher who's got a degree in chemistry, you know, and just the basics of education. And you can look at how different countries educate for sure and see, you know, you can take some extremes and look at the differences and how they do things. But I don't know, it's there's learning going on somewhere, right, in all systems. How you get that done is maybe a little slightly different, but kids reading and practicing, you know, writing the equation out and the math, or the, you know, the writing the poem, all these different things, you know, it's pretty similar. You know, you read, you listen, and you learn. You know, how you organize that is, you can do it in a million different ways, and it might look a little different, but in the end, that's what it comes down to. And so, you know, of course there's going to be things that we don't want to change. We're saying I need to do it this way because we've always done it this way and it always works. But at the same time, we need to also update our pedagogy and curriculum in a way that adapts with the times and the changing needs of our students. So good luck, everybody. And if you enjoyed listening, you can give me a review. Thanks.